Hello and welcome to the podcast, The Lotus Eaters, for the 2nd of July, 2021. I suppose this is the new month of Ramadan now as well, because Pride never ends. But anyway, so I'm joined by Carl.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking about Trump's team launching Getter. I don't know if we came to a solution on how to say this yet, but Getter will work. Also, Labour loses 7% of the vote and then declares victory. It's kind of like the meme of the guy on the podium who's come third. He's just like throwing champagne at their mouth, but okay. At least you kept the seat, I guess. Also, journalists get their critical race theory update and Macron's war on wokeism. So first thing I wanted to mention was some of the stuff we have on lotusseaters.com. So Hugo's just written an article that's gone up, I think it was 10 a.m, so it's not been up long. Independence is not freedom. So go and give that a check out. I haven't had time to read it because, you know, just been up. But there's that. I think that's free as well. It's not premium, is that correct? So.
Yeah, I think so.
But talking about premium content, if we go to the next one here, this is the Roman legionary epochs that you did with Bo that you want to talk
about. Yeah, I'm just really pleased with this, and I just wanted to shill it again. This is a really good episode, and the comments on it reflect that. Everyone seemed to really like it. And honestly, there were comments on this going like, okay, so where can I sign up? So yeah, I know. That's how I felt, to be honest.
to join the Roman legion.
Yeah, it made sounded being the Roman legion great, to be honest.
Ave, true to Kaiser. Anyway, so.
It's really good fun, that one.
So, should we get Roy into the news?
Yeah, let's get right into it. So, the Trump team has apparently launched a new social media platform called Getter, which I had never heard of until this morning.
Just realized it's kind of like Getter Done.
Well, you say that as if it's a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing.
This is reported by Politico, and therefore I guess we can assume that this is legit. Former President Donald Trump's team have quietly launched a new social media platform, billing it as an alternative, of course. The mission statement of Getter is apparently fighting cancel culture, promoting common sense, defending free speech, challenging social media monopolies, and creating a true marketplace of ideas, which sounds good. I mean, it's currently on the app stores and things like that. You can go to their website and sign up. So, how long till that's deplatformed is the question. Can't be long, can it? Let's be fair.
Because they're going to download it now.
Yeah.
It's what we did this morning.
You can also download it from their website, which I think is wise, given what happened to Parler. So this is led by Jason Miller, Trump's former spokesman. Is that Stephen Miller's brother?
I don't know.
I believe it will be.
I am glad that they're being a man of the word, though, because remember we reported on the blog they set up, which was cool, and I thought that was it. I thought they were just overhyping, but no, if they've actually set up.
Well, they should have announced this because the blog didn't go very well.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So Trump's former campaign spokesperson Tim Martyr is involved as a consultant on it. Martyr, I don't know.
get a Trump.
But the point is, it's closely connected to the Trump team, and they're not sure what Trump's involvement with the project is. I'm sure he wasn't doing that much with it. Give me a Twitter replacement, probably was the main line. And it's unclear as to whether he'll set up an account on it, but of course, @RealDonaldTrump is reserved on there for him. And it seems kind of inconceivable that he won't. I mean, his own team are setting up a social media platform. And he's not going to use it? Of course he's going to use it. And the thing is, what other options does he have at this point? He seems to refuse to want to use Parler or Gab or Minds or Telegram or anything like that. So where else is he going to go? He's not going to get his Facebook account back, and he's probably not getting his Twitter account back. So what options does he have? So this has gone live. When I downloaded it, I said, oh, it's been downloaded more than 1,000 times. Well, it had 50,000 downloads when I downloaded it. So it seems that a large number of Trump supporters are getting on it, and being Trump supporters, I told us all to get out as well. The name Getter is apparently inspired by the words getting together. The post will be 777 characters long. At least not 666 characters long, which is presumably the length of a tweet these days. The app will host videos up 3 minutes in length and will be capable of hosting live streams. That will be useful. But I imagine these are all features that will roll out in time. They're located in New York. No idea whether they're using the Apple web services or anything like that. Let's hope they're not, because creating a platform that can just be undercut by the Silicon Valley cartel, probably not wise. But anyway, it looks a lot like Twitter, and apparently you'll be able to scrape your Twitter followers across. I don't know how that's going to work. But the point is, you can follow us on getter.com. Obviously, @LotusEaters_com. And, of course, you can follow myself, and you can follow Callum. Although we didn't get Callum's one up for some reason.
That's just @Callum. So.
Just @Callum on there. Yeah, that's good.
I didn't realize the username was going to become the @. I didn't think about it.
Yeah.
So it was just like, what's your username? Callum. Oh,
Well, someone had taken at Sargon. I was annoyed. But I'm at Carl Benjamin, which is fine. That's my one. So come and follow me there. Follow Callum there. Follow the rest of the team there. And I guess we'll see you on there. Let's hope it does well, because we need something that is outside of the clutches of Silicon Valley and can't be just ruined by them. Anyway.
It's good to see you. I'm glad they're keeping their word.
Yeah, me too. I honestly, I mean, this must have been the product of like months of work as well. So when Trump had his blog up and they're all mocking it, it's interesting how they kept that quiet. And they weren't like, this isn't the platform, you morons. This is Trump's blog, you know. And they could have easily pushed back on that. Don't know why they didn't.
Anyway, Batley and Spen. So there was the by-election in Batley and Spen yesterday. A lot of people were expecting Labour to lose their seat because George Galloway was going to eat so much of that vote share that they would crash. Almost. Very, very close. Like, unbelievably close.
Okay, so before we go into this, why is this important? Why is this by-election important?
By-election, not important, because it's just some by-election, who cares? Yeah. But it was about Keir Starmer, essentially. So Keir Starmer, leader of the Labour Party, new one after Corbyn, been terrible, just as bad.
Yeah.
And he had lost the last by-election, he was about to lose this one, and then that would have been him gone. That would have been the political shift of the alliance.
So I saw all the sort of hyenas in Navarra Media and all the other sort of like lefty lines going, well, if Starmer loses this, that's it, he's got no legitimacy. It's
like,
okay.
Like, the entire Labour camp also assumed they were going to lose this, so all the Corbynites were just like pegging in, just like, okay, as soon as we lose, we get rid of Starmer.
Yeah.
And then we can get back power. Well, they didn't get that. So this is actually, even though it's a Labour hold, it's actually a pretty good victory. Like, I'm not sad about this at all, because of course they also lost a massive amount of their vote share, so good, because death to Labour. And then they're stuck with Keir Starmer and they can't even do anything about it. They're all just gritting their teeth being like, oh, so this is the Guardian article with the vote share. If we can scroll down, they should have some graphs on here in which they have the vote share shift. So you can see the first one there, Labour losing 7.5% of the vote, Tories losing 1.6. Didn't expect the Tories to lose votes, but there you go. That's what you get. Mm. And then the winner of the night being George Galloway, in the fact that he gained 21.9% of the vote out of nowhere. I mean, 0 to 22%. It's amazing work.
That is very good work.
Regardless of what you
think.
Can't deny it. But I only want to look at those graphs, not the rest of the text. But the point in that graph, you can go back up, is the huge slump in Labour there.
Mm.
And remember, it's not just that'll swing back immediately in the next election. A lot of people just don't like voting for a party and then don't. Ever. Once you get them to start being free voters, it's important.
Mm.
So not a bad result for, I think, even though Labour get to keep their seat by the hair of their, you know, the skin of their teeth there, because they also have no causes belli to get rid of Keir Starmer. There's no leadership reform that's coming.
And the thing is, it was less than 1% difference between Labour and Conservative there.
Like 300 votes.
God. Okay, they must have been... Keir Starmer's just dripping with sweat. God, you know.
And as you mentioned, there have all been the hyenas circling around. So this is Navarra Media platforming Owen Jones to rant about how Starmer should resign because he's going to lose this.
Because he's not Jeremy Corbyn.
No, he hasn't. So what do you do? Because like, he hasn't. I mean, sure, he lost 7% of the vote overnight in this area. But, So they're kind of just stuck in the worst of both worlds. Where they're losing, they're bleeding votes, but they also like can't do anything because they're like, yes, it's a win. I swear.
Technical victory.
So this whole election has also been hilarious, so we're just going to enjoy the fact that this has been so funny. So as we mentioned before, there's the Labour candidate who was handing out leaflets that said things such as your MP, I will give you a strong national voice on Kashmir. Rubber bullets have been used at the holy site of Al-Aqsa Mosque at the holy month of Ramadan, and this is totally unacceptable. And it's like,
what, in Batley in Spain? No, 1,000 miles away, actually, but, you know, this is the Labour concern.
As Calvin points out, you're a Labour candidate for Palestine. So, I mean, that's just where Labour is going. Like, the meme of the black flag of Labour came true. And there's also some of the other stuff they handed out that really pissed off the Hindus, apparently.
Oh.
So, if we go to the next one. This is a leaflet that was handed out by Labour with, on the front, text... Don't risk a Tory MP who is not on your side. And then an arrow pointing to Boris Johnson shaking
with
hands
Modi.
With Modi.
It's very interesting.
So him at the G7 meeting with another world leader. And they're like, yeah, see, he's not on your side. He's shaking hands with a Hindu. So saying to the Muslim voters there, yeah, he supports the Hindus. So I'm glad that the racial hatred is back on the menu, I guess.
Thanks,
Labour. Of course, the Indians were like, this is Hindu phobic. not wrong. So, I mean, like, do we have
Boris pictured with the Hindu leader? Oh, there we go. That tells you everything you need to know.
Like, do we have permission now to just put like pictures of Labour MPs shaking hands with any Muslim leader and being like, well, look,
Hamas
at it.
And Hezbollah?
Yeah. Well, no, that's not even it. I mean, he's a leader of India. He's not some terrorist.
Well, like, good point. Good point.
You could just like have them shaking hands with, I don't know, like
the president of Egypt or something,
or the Muslim Council of Britain, and being like, they're not on your side. Apparently, that's okay. God. Oh no, that would be Islamophobic, would it?
Can you imagine how much trouble you'd be in if the Conservatives had done that?
Exactly.
God
That's
damn.
The thing. It's like, okay. It's just Labour doing this. So, go to the next one. Of course, remember, because having Islamic views is also Islamophobic, which is what we learnt during this election. So, Labour Muslim Network, verified checkmark. As a reminder, it is a breach of the Islamophobia definition adopted by this party to make stereotypical allegations about Muslims. This includes the common trope that Muslims are inherently, and as a community, more likely to be anti-Semitic, homophobic, and or misogynistic.
Don't look at the Pew polling.
Not even they're all homophobes, but more likely to be homophobes. That statement as well is Islamophobia.
Just don't ask Muslims in Britain what their views, the moral views on homosexuality are, and then you won't find yourself in a problem like this.
I mean, the Gallup poll, what was it? 0% of British Muslims believe homosexuality is ever moral?
Yes.
Morally acceptable?
Yes.
Right. Okay. So they also had a response to this because, so as you can see there, someone from a source with inside the campaign said that the Labour group had lost the conservative Muslim vote over gay rights in Palestine. So in response, the Labour Muslim Network, who have said that having Islamic views is Islamophobic, decided to say once again Muslim Labour members are forced to endure offensive and Islamophobic briefings from the Labour Party. This is an insult to the waves of Muslim members, councillors and MPs who have spent weeks campaigning for Labour victory in Batley and Spen, who probably also have those views. Let's be honest.
Well, 0%. 0%
think it's morally acceptable to be gay. British Muslims.
Not our opinion.
Not Iraqi Muslims. Like, not Somali Muslims. Not Saudi Muslims. British Muslims.
Who are interestingly more progressive, actually. If the Pew 2013 Pew polling is anything to go by, the British Muslims are uncharacteristically intolerant across the Muslim world. There's something like 88% of Muslims worldwide think that homosexuality is not morally acceptable. But if it's 100% of British Muslims, like, that's like, okay.
But to say that is Islamophobic. Yeah.
Well,
so the big thing out of this election for liberals like us was really the issue of blasphemy, because the teacher there, the one who may or may not have shown an image of Muhammad, it's now up in arms about whether or not he even did.
Are they?
I know, right?
I assume that he did.
There's allegations that nothing was even shown.
Oh,
so
okay.
What was that about? So the candidates were asked about this. So we're going to play the first clip here, which is the Labour candidate's response to being directly asked on this topic. So let's go to the first video.
I think what happened at Batley Grammar School has been resolved in terms of the inquiry that's taken place, and I was involved with a number of people who were dealing with that. I think we've got to a solution now where it has been admitted that mistakes were made. I think that's really important, and apologies have been made for any offence that was caused. I think it's horrendous that a teacher's ended up in hiding. I have reached out to him via his union and offered to support him in whichever way I can, and I would continue to do that if I was elected. The main focus now, as somebody who has worked in this community, bringing people together from different backgrounds, is that we pull together as a community, we focus on the children's education. I think that's what everybody wants, and we make sure that this teacher is not put under the spotlight any more than he already has been. He needs to be able to get on with his life.
Do you want to see that teacher back in the classroom at Batley Grammar?
I think that has to be a decision for the teacher. And I'm sure those conversations are taking place. And I think that has to be a matter for him.
But if he feels his life is under threat by going back to to his job, there's a problem, isn't there?
Well, I think, again, that's up to him to decide. And I would imagine that, you know, he'd probably appreciate having the time and the privacy to do that, which I think is what people should be very respectful of.
You may be under the threat of death from an Islamic extremist, but, I mean, it's up to you to decide whether you want to go back to your job. Thanks, British government.
Like, the Labour Party there, like, I'm under death threats from Islamists. And you're like, yeah, that's up to you. Like, that's up to you to put yourself in that position to have death threats put at you. You know, I wore a short skirt. Yeah, it's up to you to get raped. I mean, you wore the skirt.
Well, that's what they're saying there, actually.
That's the argument. But also the statement she said there, the teacher should not be put under any more spotlight.
As in, I just wish this would go away.
That could go both ways. It's like, is she saying that we shouldn't be persecuting him, or is she saying that we should just under the carpet?
Well, I mean, I agree he shouldn't be getting death threats.
I mean, it's waffle.
If that's what she means.
Waffle at best. An acceptance of Islamic blasphemy at worst. So then we have the Tory candidate, who wasn't much better. He was a little bit better on this, but being the Tory, he was trying to just sidestep the whole thing. So let's play this clip.
Well, Kim says the matter's been resolved, but it evidently hasn't, because we've got a teacher who's still in hiding and doesn't feel safe to come back to school. And I'm director of an academy trust here in West Yorkshire, and I understand more than anybody here the importance of safeguarding and the duty of care we have on our children and our staff. And it is completely unacceptable the way that this teacher has been dealt with, and the fact he's had to be in hiding. But the job of an MP is to speak out when things aren't right, and to challenge and speak up for their communities. And we didn't have that with our last Labour MP. There was no statement bringing the community back together or challenging the school. And my commitment on this issue, if I'm elected on the 1st of July, is to offer the experience I've got as a director of an academy trust to help the school and the teacher, if it's wanted, to build back from this in a better way, and work with the government to ensure that our core values continue to be taught in our curriculum of rule of law, democracy, individual liberty and tolerance of religious freedom.
I mean, okay, so generally...
I love the interview at the end there. You see his face?
Yeah. Like, I mean, generally, that wasn't a bad statement.
No,
right?
Like,
I agree with him that the obviously, you know, but why does he have to sneak Build Back Better into it?
Tory, stop.
Yeah.
Just stop. No one likes this.
Yeah.
No one in the Conservative camp even likes this.
And it makes you so obviously look like you've been groomed by Davos, you know, that you've gone to Davos and you've been given your marching orders, and that's all we're hearing when you say that. Just stop saying it.
It's such a bad phrase. Get Brexit done. Great phrase. Build Back Better. Terrible phrase. Even without all the other stuff around it. It's awful. But he said in there the issue hasn't been resolved. That's true. He says it's up to MPs to speak out on these issues. True. It depends on which way you go. That's the right thing to do or not. But then the Build Back Better, not great. But he does say we must teach in schools rule of law, democracy, individual liberty, and tolerance of religious freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is the thing about blasphemy. Like, do you have a religion or no religion is protected under law in the UK. So blasphemy is also protected. So not terrible. Like, but he could have done better. Could have really done better there. I mean, there are candidates who have done better there. But so then there's the other stuff that happened around here, which was interesting. So here's the first video here that went a bit viral, with 1.2 million views. So some I presume supporter of Galloway, I'm not really sure, but he came up and he started shouting at the Labour candidate, why is she not supporting the Muslim community, or blah, blah, blah. And then she just gets annoyed and like walks off and gets in her car. And this has been blown up into like a huge thing, but it's like, well...
Just looks like leftists harassing her.
Like, this is... But it's also, there's no violence. Like, he shouts at a person that he doesn't like. This is typical Labour activism, in which you just shout that at anyone. So I don't know why they're so surprised by the whole thing.
Yeah.
But then there's also the fact that there's no violence, it's just direct action, as leftists would call it.
Mm-hmm.
There's more direct action, isn't there? See here? So this is a story of West Yorkshire police release image of a man wanted in connection with assaults on Labour activists in Batley and Spen.
Oh.
It's just direct action, as Antifa and the left would say. It's just engaging in anti-Labour action. No.
What do you do? Bring a milkshake?
Yeah, he's a violent criminal who's engaging in petty terrorism. That's what it should be, and that's how Antifa should be treated.
Yeah.
And I hate that they...
And Labour activists when they're busy attacking people they don't like.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, this nicely brings us along to George Galloway. So let's go to George Galloway's leaflets, which I thought were amazing. Like, regardless of what you think of the man, his campaigning has been unbelievably good. I have to give it to him. It's fantastic. So here's his leaflets. And you can see the choice in our area, in all caps, people's champion, George Galloway. Or, not caps... Unknown Tory candidate. It's like Chad versus Virgin here. Like Chad, people's champion, George Galloway versus the Virgin Tory candidate, whoever that is. That's fantastic. So then there's the other stuff he's been doing. So he's got his posters up, which also look amazing. So let's go to the next leg, which you can see him with his posters of him trying to fight you, which is just, I thought was great. Like, I love it. And then... If we go to the next thing, this is him. He's been doing interviews with pretty much everyone. Like, Labour and Tories have their press offices where they cherry pick who they want to talk to. Galloway's been a proper person here and just, you know, you want to know my views? Here they are. Here's your interview. Bye-bye. That's the right thing to do. And he had Owen Jones come down. And what was amazing about this is Commissar Jones really went to town as just being like, you're a bad leftist. Why?
Because you're not woke.
You're going to help the Tories, therefore you're a bad leftist. Smack, smack, smack.
Oh, like, not team player, George.
It says 20 minutes of this. And even his own audience, like I watched this and I looked in the comments, even his own audience were like, oh man, you came off bad here.
Oof.
Because he did. So let's go for the next clip in which he just smacks George Galloway with being a bad leftist.
And it has you pointing decisively Starmer out.
Yeah.
He's not Prime Minister. So it seems odd for someone like yourself, former Labour MP, certainly someone traditionally man of the left, campaigning not against the Conservative Prime Minister, who, as you say, does have a big majority, but against the leader of the opposition, who's nowhere near power. Doesn't a part of you feel a bit sad that you'll end up, despite everything, delivering a seat to the Conservative
Party? No, we don't concede that at all. I think if Keir Starmer becomes the first leader of the opposition in political history to lose two of his own seats to the government in midterm, in 3 months, his position will be untenable.
Boris Johnson wants
That's
to
what
do
you
well,
want, Owen.
Doesn't he? I mean, Boris, if Labour lose the seat, if the Tories win it, partly thanks to your campaign, Boris Johnson, we all know, we saw what he did on the exit poll, he punched the air. He will be a very, very, very happy man. He will be boosted, his chances of winning an even bigger majority in the next election increase. Doesn't that make you feel...
Black Lives Matter, or Black Lives Mansions, as they're known in some parts of the United States.
What do you mean Black Lives Mansions?
Well, the leaders of BLM in America have miraculously turned up in gated, white-only communities owning large
mansions. BLM isn't one organisation. It's a movement. It's a franchise. It's just... I mean, in 2017, you said you could never support any Tory. In 2018, you said you'd sooner poke your eyes out. And then you voted for the Tories in Scotland. You didn't poke your eyes out. They're still there. I can see them.
When the facts change, so do my opinions.
Do you think your younger self would have seen you vote Tory and gone, what the just hell like, would I end up doing that for?
As I say, when facts change, so do my opinions.
And it was amazing. Like, if people haven't watched it, go and give it a watch, because much as I don't like to promote Owen's channel, that was hilarious. And I'm not misrepresenting that at all. Like, you can go watch the full thing. And he's just like, yeah, but you're helping the Tories. He's like, yeah, but when the facts change, my opinions change.
Yes.
I can't fathom this, says Owen Jones.
Owen Jones, yeah, can't understand it. And the thing is, though, him like, you know, oh, well, you're hurting Keir Starmer. Don't you want Keir Starmer out, Owen? You know, that's good for you. You hate Keir Starmer, don't you? I thought you did anyway.
Yeah, so there's that. So you've got Commissar Jones, and you expect Commissar Jones to do exactly that. I mean, he's the Commissar. But Commissar BBC did exactly the same thing, and to a worse degree, I think. And this is from the neutral organisation. So this is the interview, and his guys put this up on his channel, and oh my God, is it bad for the BBC. So let's go for the first one, in which they just berate him again for being a bad leftist.
Why have you come to stand in this seat? You have nothing to do with this particular seat.
Would you ask that of any of the other candidates?
Have done. Yes,
why
I have done.
They come to stand in this seat? Because there's an election. And the
but you're
election,
not a local the, man. Why wouldn't somebody vote for Kim Leadbeater, who is born and bred here and knows the constituency very well?
Is there any need for me in this interview, or are you just going to give a party political broadcast?
Some of your campaign is surely about getting rid of Keir Starmer as the leader of the Labour Party.
Sure.
You've spoken about that.
Sure.
And you've talked about yourself being a revolutionary in the past. That's this kind of revolution, though, is a negative one, surely. What are your positive goals, other than trying to bring down the Labour leader?
I ask again, is there any point in me being in this interview? This is a party political broadcast. All of your questions,
let's talk about the Conservatives then, because they could have kept that police station open. They've been in power since 2010.
No, it was Labour that closed it.
If you split the Labour vote...
There is no Labour vote. There are only voters.
Okay.
Individual voters.
If you drive a wedge through the majority that Labour currently hold, surely you will be handing this election to the Conservatives. Is that what you want?
Is this Labour TV or is it the BBC? Is this Labour TV?
Are you happy to see the Conservatives gain power here?
There is no such thing as a Labour vote. There are only voters, individual human beings, who have to be persuaded to vote for you. Now, your concern for the fate of the Labour Party in this constituency is touching, probably in breach of the BBC's charter.
I'm asking you about the
reasons why people are switching
off. Are you happy
the BBC
to have the
news
Conservatives
in
power?
I'm fighting to win this election. If you vote for me, you'll get me.
I love it. You spoke over the little bit in the first part, though, which was the best, in which he says, why would people vote for you, someone who's not in the constituency, unlike the Labour candidate Kim Leadbeater, who lives in the area and knows the area very well? I mean, could you get any more obvious in your bias of just being like, this candidate's fantastic and wonderful. She lives in the area, Labour. And then they won't vote for evil you, Mr. Galloway. It's unbelievably bad. Like, even worse than Owen. And you'll notice it's the same argument. Just, you're going to help the Tories. You're a bad leftist.
But even more, it's like, aren't you a foreigner? Like, okay, Labour supporting BBC. We're against foreigners now, are we? It's okay that he's foreign. That's not a problem.
And what's amazing is this got even better. Like, this got better and better. So the next clip is him basically explaining why you should defund the BBC because of this interview, if nothing else. And it's great. So let's play.
You've said it's about you. It should be about the people of Batley and Spen. How long do you... You said it's about me. It's about votes for me.
My record, my programme, and what I'm offering the people in this by-election. You're no Jeremy Paxman. I don't know if that's what you're trying to pretend that you are.
No, not at all.
And the BBC News Channel sure ain't no singing and dancing success. I gave you my time to speak about the issues in this election. All you have done from the first second is attack me on behalf of the Labour Party.
No, not at all.
Which is
I'm
a very odd use of
I'm
all these
you.
One, two, three, four, five BBC staff.
I'm asking
it's an
you.
Odd use of the I'm taxpayers'
you.
Money.
It's a licence fee payer, not a taxpayer.
What's the difference between a licence fee and a taxpayer?
It's a levy, not
you
a tax.
You want to have a debate about that?
What I'd like you to
Because people are
do...
sick paying the BBC for party political propaganda
like
on behalf
you,
of the establishment.
I would like to ask you then, how long-term a commitment are you prepared to make in Batley and Spen?
Exactly the same as everyone else. This constituency ceases to exist at the next general election. Perhaps you didn't know that.
George Galloway from the Workers' Party. Thank you very much for talking to us.
I'd be lying if I said thank you back.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm kind of disappointed he didn't win now. Yeah. Even though I totally disagree with almost everything he stands for.
You have to hand it to him.
Yeah.
That was gold. I mean, that was absolute gold. Fully exposed her there and the organisation for what they are, which is just the wing of the establishment to keep them in order. Mm. And it's wonderful, wonderful, if nothing else. But just the fact that she's arguing with him about, oh, it's not a tax, it's a levy. And it's just like, oh, shut up.
Aren't you hurting Keir Starmer? Shut up. Yes, good. What do you want?
Well, there was something in the start of there that I've forgotten. I was meant that I should have jotted it down. But the fact that she's, again, being like, how dare you harm the Labour Party?
Mm.
That's the message.
Labour Party defence force at the BBC has leapt into action.
Like, I saw people posting in the chat as well, excellent point, which is just, her narrative is, how dare you run? You're meant to lose.
Yes.
Like, how dare you fight against us? You're not meant to run at all.
Mm.
The Labour Party's meant to win here. So good on him for that. Even though Labour get in and they keep their seat by 300 votes.
Oh, it's a Pyrrhic victory.
Very Pyrrhic. Very, very Pyrrhic. And I saw Keir Starmer this morning was saying Labour is back in response to this.
One more victory like this and Labour is undone. That's what he's saying. Like, I'm not even kidding. That, like, being within 1% of the Conservatives, that, like...
That's victory, is it?
Yeah. that's brown trousers time for Keir Starmer. But anyway, so I thought we'd talk about how journalists are apparently receiving their NPC update on how to discuss critical race theory. And this is something that I wanted to cover because I think you'll be seeing these kinds of tactics and stratagems used by media personalities in order to try and defend critical race theory and their bunk. So I thought we'd go through them and have a look because this is on journalistsresource.org and two experts have offered insights on how to help journalists make sense of the recent controversy around critical race theory, a decades-old legal framework for examining how US laws and systems have perpetuated racism. So defending critical race theory, because we're just assuming that that's all true, and this is presented as if critical race theory is just neutral, scientific, objective, fair-minded, true, you know, all that sort of thing. But it begins by otherizing Republicans. Republican lawmakers and elected leaders across the US have spoken out in recent months against public schools teaching critical race theory, blah, blah, blah. What I find...
Republicans bad.
Yeah, Republicans Why? Bad, right? But I love the decades-old legal framework, right? As if the appeal to age gives it a legitimacy through tradition. Oh, yes. Well, it's traditional critical race theory. It's 50 years old. I don't know what your problem is. This is very well established, you know. As if it's just morally neutral. It's just a tool in the toolbox.
I mean, they've done this before. The institution of slavery is as old as civilization. Therefore, we should be able to keep it. Democrats, 1850, whatever it is.
Exactly. Yeah, this really is. Many of these officials have introduced a flood of state and local policy proposals aimed at limiting race-based instruction in elementary, middle and high schools. That's good. Keep going. Not all of these plans specifically mention critical race theory, but they do place controls on how US educators teach US history. That's good. As in, you don't really want like the Nazi view of history being taught in your schools, right? You want the American view of history being taught in your schools because you're Americans. So why is that a problem? Meanwhile, even as critics call critical race theory un-American and a divisive political movement, which it is, it appears that people on all sides of the issue have different understandings of what it is. The technical term has entered public discourse without a clear definition. And the thing is, it's not just un-American, it's anti-American. That's the thing. Specifically, it's anti the United States. It specifically views America, the Republic, as a continuation of, say, white consciousness, of the original white English settlers from the Americas, what is now the United States.
But also the embodiment of Martin Luther King's dream, yeah. And therefore evil.
Yes, yes. And they specifically say this in their textbooks as well. Republican politicians have pushed to ban critical race theory from public school classrooms, even though it's typically not discussed there. And I love this defense. Oh, it's typically not discussed there, you know. Yeah, it's not. But the effects of it will be felt there. The worldview of critical race theory is what will be informing the sort of policy decisions in the classrooms, built on certain assumptions about black people and white people and other non-black, non-white people that are very, very much up for debate, right? We are not simply assuming that all black people are being oppressed by all white people at all times. That's the assumption that's made in critical race theory. We're not simply assuming that. And so sitting there going, well, I mean, they're not teaching critical race theory. No, of course they're not, because these are schools. What they're doing is teaching the consequences of critical race theory. And, oh, the blacks are being oppressed by the white students. White students, how do you feel about this? You know, things like that. And it's obviously not. But while news coverage tends to focus on strong emotions expressed by people on both sides, journalists leave out important details and context. For example, many journalists over the past several months have reported on CRT without confirming whether it is or is not part of the curriculum in local school districts or school districts elsewhere. It doesn't have to be on the curriculum to be affecting the education. If the teachers have gone through a critical race theory course and bought into the axioms that it works upon, then it's going to be about the framing of the issues themselves. Because what critical race theory does is frames things in the lens of a race war. They view it expressly through the lens of racial power.
Like Mein Kampf doesn't have to be mandatory reading. No. If all the teachers are paid up members of the Nazi Party, true believers, exactly. You think that's going to have no effect on the classroom?
Exactly. The idea that we're not going to worry about bias all of a sudden is just, oh, we don't have to worry about people's biases now. And it's like, right, okay, this is obviously absurd. And so we get Dorinda Carter Andrews, who's the chairperson for the Department of Teacher Education at Michigan State University, in an Ask an Expert segment, says, critical race theory is not an ideology or a political orientation that assumes white people are bad. That's a lie.
Liar.
That's just a flat-out lie.
It's a fundamental part of it.
You couldn't describe it in any other way. I mean, that's just obviously not true. It assumes white supremacy is bad in all its forms. Okay, so why are white activist groups abolishing themselves if white people aren't bad? Why is Robin DiAngelo saying that white identity is entirely negative? And why do white people therefore need to be less white if white people are not inherently bad?
Because to be white is to be a white supremacist. And we're only against white supremacists.
Well, only according to Ibram Kahindi and Robin DiAngelo and all of the others.
But that's the pathetic word game. They're like, we're against white supremacy, but we also include in the term white supremacy every white person ever.
Also, America. Yeah. America is a white supremacy country, and all whites are perpetuating white supremacy unconsciously, according to critical race theorists. But we're not saying that white people are bad. It's like, sorry, that's just not true. It's a practice or approach that provides language and a lens for examining racism at institutional and structural levels.
It's saying when white people aren't bad, just the white devils, but all of you are white devils. That's it.
That is basically it. Underlying this is the premise that racism is endemic to American society and that white supremacist ideals and practices should be dismantled. Yeah, they are the assumptions, and the assumptions are that, of course, this is because of white people in America, and these are crazy assumptions. The assumption is that the United States itself is a white supremacist project, And of course, any conclusions drawn from critical race theory are framed in such a way as to delegitimize the United States itself. And white people are at the very base and cause of all of this, as far as critical race theory is concerned. This is mad. How's like, oh, look at this word game. Sorry, no. Apparently, they say, oh, it's a theory devised by legal scholars in the 1970s. Yet racist legal scholars who are just like, by the way, we don't like you critical legal scholars. Sorry, your critical legal theory we don't like. Why? Because you're white? That's literally their reason. They're like, no, we, the race crits, as they called themselves, are going to divorce ourselves from the critical legal scholars because they're white. It's like, sorry, how is this not saying white people are inherently bad?
It's, like, the Nazis have theories on, like, international Jewish Marxism, but that doesn't give it any credence. Like, that's still evil.
Exactly. We don't then adopt their presuppositions as we go into talking about what the Nazis believed, you know? Obviously not. It's mad. And so, this person teaches critical race theory as part of a graduate course called Racial Justice in K-12 Education Policy. And this is why we see that we don't need to have people actually teaching critical race theory to have the consequences of critical race theory in the classroom. This K-12 education policy is directly involved and informed by critical race theory, but it is not teaching critical race theory. It's teaching the framework. And so this is all informing this work, and it's basically indoctrinating the teachers with a kind of Nazi-like view of the world, as in a racially conscious view of the world. So all white people should be aware of their race at all places and all times, all black people, etc., etc. And in this view, the white people are the Jews, whereas the black people are the Germans being oppressed by Jewish capital. That's their assumption, basically.
Change the words out, it's the same ideology.
Exactly. Change white to Jew and black to German, and you've got Nazism. It's just right there in your face. And she continues, I think there's some mischaracterizing going on here. Yeah, by you. You're the one mischaracterizing it. Because critical race theory has the word race in it, perhaps people are intentionally equating critical race theory with having something to do with race or the teaching of racism. You just need 5 seconds worth of reading of any critical race theory text will show you that critical race theory is built on, quote, racial consciousness and is focused around what they believe to be unequal racial power dynamics.
Like Hitler's,
and of course,
view,
everything's racist.
But like Hitler's view on international Jewish capitalism, it only has Jewish in the name. It's not anti-Semitic.
You're acting like it's got something to do with Jews. Like it's mad. It's absolutely mad. And so I guess this is a good time to point out that I did a video called Critical Race Theory Explained recently, in which, as you can see there, I'm going through their works. I'm going through their books. I'm giving you the quotes from them directly from their own mouths to say this is what they think. And it's literally as I'm saying. You can watch that at your own time. So going back to the article, because I don't want to spend too much time doing this. The legislators have filed bills talking about how this is connected to the 1619 Project, calling it ahistorical, which it is. The 1619 Project, of course, comes in for a bit of defense in this article for some reason, because it's not historical. I mean, the best part about the 1619 Project that really points out just that it is, as one historian put, a displacement of historical understanding by ideology, is that the, quote, one of the primary reasons the colonists decided to declare independence from Britain was because they wanted to protect the institution of slavery.
What?
That's not true.
We had slavery still at that point.
Yeah. It's a lie. It's an outright, flat-out lie. This is just factually inaccurate, right? Because the abolitionist movement was practically non-existent at this point, wouldn't gain ground until about another 10, 15 years after the American Revolution. Total lie. It's a flat-out lie. And historian Gordon Wood responded to this saying, I don't know of any colonist who said they wanted independence in order to preserve their slaves. No colonist expressed alarm that the mother country was out to abolish slavery in 1776. Because it just wasn't. It wasn't until the 1790s that the abolitionist movement got really going. So it was only after this that was the case. But anyway, so they say it's unclear why critical race theory and the 1619 Project have been closely linked in public discourse, although both delve into issues around race and racism and encourage students to consider America's history from new perspectives. It's the same perspective. That's why. Like, they rest on the same wrong-headed foundations and use exactly the same lens with which to analyze the world. You couldn't arrive at the 1619 Project without employing critical race theory. And so they're just like, oh, I don't know why that happened. It's the idea that the English colonies and the American Republic, there's no distinction between the two. Anyway, and the thing is as well, the critical race theorists recognise that the American Republic is race blind as well. And I think that's part of the tactic. The reason they want to kind of fold it into the English colonies is because the English colonies were not race blind, obviously. And so they use this to undermine Martin Luther King's dream of what America could have been.
Well, it is. I mean, in their words, they describe modern America as a place in which Martin Luther King's dream is enshrined in law. Yes. And they don't like that.
Yes. Because racial consciousness. Nazism. Anyway, so their responses are familiarize yourself. And again, right, they're instructing the journalists on how to defend critical race theory here. So familiarize yourself with what critical race theory is and is not. That way you'll know when the term is being misused. I did, which is why I can correct this nonsense. The second one is, when sources assert that critical race theory is un-American or unpatriotic, ask them to define American and patriotic. Oh, that's good. Why not just make unreasonable demands of commonly defined words? I mean, I guess the stock defense, this is the stock defense. So it's when, you know, when they're like, well, define British values. So, okay, I'll choose a bunch and you might not agree, but I'm going to define what they are. And so if you're an American, you can just say American as pertaining to the United States. This is a common definition of American, and patriotic meaning a love of one's country. Easy. These are really easy ones to define. And they say, well, look, you know, when politicians say unpatriotic and un-American, push them to explain the word choices. This is really important to get at what people really mean by those terms. Those terms are used by some people as talking points because they shut down conversations. Some people are trying to use language in a way that will evoke an emotional response among whoever they're trying to teach. Journalists should include sources' responses about the word choice in their coverage. For example, critical race theory asks, why isn't everyone getting equal justice? How can it be un-American to strive for equality? Because
equality isn't a liberal or American value. It's a communist value.
Exactly. Exactly why.
The liberal and American value is freedom.
The Marxists who created critical legal theory and then critical race theory are promoting equality. But the thing is, America promises freedom. And the opposite of equality.
You can't have equality if you have freedom. And if you have equality, you don't have freedom.
Yes. Precisely correct. And so as you can see, though, you know, how can it be un-American strive for equality as if equality is just assumed all Americans are like, oh, yeah, of course, we're all for equality.
That phrase is just, how can it be un-American to support the Soviet Union?
Yeah, exactly right. That's exactly right. The next one is ask 8 questions to cover important details from news missing. Honestly, it's not terribly. These aren't great questions. Do the people speaking out and against critical race theory actually understand what it is? Basically, they understand that it's the promotion of race consciousness, which is racism. So yes, you know, so you can stand on that.
You don't have to have read the whole damn textbook.
No, you don't. You can just say, well, it's trying to teach racial consciousness, which I view as a form of racism because I adhere to the view of the American Republic and a race-blind, individualistic society. So that's good enough, and you can stand on that. How did this issue become a news story? Because they were teaching racism in classrooms.
They were segregating kids.
They were segregating kids. They were teaching white kids that they were bad because they were white. And black kids, they were stupid because they're black. Like all of these things that racists would do that I don't want them to do, if that's okay.
Why are you
okay.
not on my side, Joe?
Yeah, exactly. Like, why are you defending that? You know. Yes, do critics of critical race theory have a firm understanding of how teachers present and explore issues? Well, firm enough to know it's anti-American racism. And then the fourth point is investigate the potential impact of teaching K-12 students about race and racial inequality. And that appears to be massive racial division. Blacks feeling like they can't compete and whites feeling ashamed of themselves for no good reason. Remember, these are children. These are children that are feeling ashamed of themselves for no good reason and feeling like they can't get ahead because all of the people around them are telling them they're oppressed by being black. Evil is what it is. This, of course, is something we have lots of evidence for. And I just took 5 minutes to go through Mythicist Milwaukee's Twitter feed to get some examples of this. You've got these critical race theorists. Again, a lot of it's white people telling black kids that they're inferior, frankly, which is why critical race theory is evil.
Democrats have never changed.
No, they haven't. And this one woman is saying how she spoke to a black teacher who said that being black is a pre-existing condition. It's racism. It's just straight up racism.
You are disabled because you're black.
Yeah, and she claims to have been citing an Ibram Kendi style anti-racism ethos, but being black is a pre-existing condition.
That's why you can't get healthcare coverage.
Yep. The next one was that racism is an incurable disease of white people.
Race only disease. Only affects certain races.
and it's incurable. It's just the congenital disease of white people. They can't get rid of it.
Yeah, how do we solve the problem of racism then? And if it's incurable among white people?
Exactly.
What do you have to do then?
But the thing is, I mean, at least they're talking about white people as if they're human, because in the next one, they talk about black and, quote, yellow people as if they are not human. They apparently aren't viewed as human in our white racist white supremacist society. This
at least they didn't say slanty-eyed, you know?
Like, I guess. But this is intersectionality, this is critical race theory, this is what it is doing, and this is why it's terrible.
Hmm. And that's how the update works as well.
And that's how the update... That's how they
when
want journalists to defend
it. We talk about them getting the update, that's it.
Yeah, that's literally it. That's them trying to defend the indefensible, the absolutely indefensible. And these people are treating it as if it's a new religion. It really is just a new way of looking at the world. Oh, yeah, I could become a Nazi. No. Why would you want to? Why are you allowing that? The Republicans are completely right to ban it.
I can't get over how the Dems really do pick the worst things on earth to try and defend.
This is mad, isn't it? And it's just the worst thing. Like, oh, by the way, you know, black people aren't even human. Racism's an incurable disease of white people. You're basically disabled.
Like, if you black, you're disabled.
Yeah, that's awful. I mean, there were loads of other ones as well, but I still want to go. Honestly, it's depressing. But anyway, it's no surprise then that Macron has turned on wokeness. And this is good because he's a major world leader, if we can consider France a major country, which I think legally we might be obliged to do.
Still on the Security Council, let's say.
Yeah, but the point is Macron has decided that it's actually woke leftists that are ruining France. So he has adopted the 2016 anti-SJW position on the left, which is good to see. Good to see that major world leaders can come out and say, you know what, Sargon's right. The political left is ruining French society because they insist on defining their countrymen according to ethnicity and depicting them as victims, Macron has claimed. Welcome to the club.
Ba-ba-ba-based!
Yeah, finally!
That's fantastic!
You know, I mean, he's actually arrived at the correct position.
What an amazing quote.
Yeah.
Just the left's awful. Why? Because they define everyone by their race.
Yeah, and they depict the non-whites as victims.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. In an interview with Elle magazine, he said that ethnic minorities have effectively been placed under house arrest by left-wing ideology. He also blamed black rights activists and feminists for seeking to define people according to their gender and skin color. Yep, that's intersectionality. That's the product of critical race theory. He's exactly right.
Like, I read one of the interviews, a different one, in which they were talking about feminism, and she's like, so are you a humanist feminist or an intersectional feminist? And you could see, like, even in the text form of him, like, groaning and being like, no, I'm not an intersectionalist.
Good. Like, see, good. This, of course, they say is likely to resonate in France because, I mean, I guess nobody in France wants to define the world this way, which has long refused to categorize
people. It resonates everywhere.
Well, yeah, exactly.
In the United States and the UK, even with the Democrats in charge, when you ask the random people on the street, no one agrees to this stuff.
No.
It's like, well, the polling is what, like 6% of people can agree to this?
Yeah.
Even in the most wacko parts of the United States.
Yeah, and
the country most infected.
In the US, I think it was 15%, and in UK it's 10%. But that's just progressive, you know, sort of like left-wing ideology. That's not explicitly critical race theory. And so they, you know, these people, a number of them will doubtless be like, well, I'm for the good things. You know, it's like, yeah, but are you for them in this package is the question. Because the French, of course, are quite consistent on this. Everyone in France is French, and they don't even ask their race, religion, or sexuality on the census form.
As Douglas Murray will point out, it's a pact between the different parties as well. Everyone agrees, left and right.
Yeah.
Islamism bad, wokeism not good. And that's something we don't have in the Anglosphere, and it's depressing.
No, we actually have a woke progressive alliance in the UK, where the Liberal Democrats, the Labour Party, the Green Party, and the Communist Party pretty much all agree that, yeah, we're radical communists, and we buy into wokeism.
And the Tories like, we'll be there in 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Next year, we will agree and join the progressive alliance. Anyway, so Macron carries on saying, I'm seeing society becoming progressively more racial. We had freed ourselves from this approach, and now we are once more categorizing people according to their race, and doing that we are we are totally placing them under house arrest. Macron's interview was interpreted as an attempt to portray himself as a defender of the French social model, threatened by the sort of leftist ideas that are common in universities in the UK and America. His remarks were also viewed as an attempt to appeal to mainstream voters and reaffirm his claim to the centre ground before the elections. Cynical, but probably true, but he's also right that woke ideology is ruining society, every society wherever it goes. French society, no exception. And as you say, he defines himself as a feminist of the French kind, which, don't know about that, but my feminism is a humanism. I'm on the side of universalism. I don't subscribe to a fight that defines everyone according to their own identity or their own particularity. So not even sure if I agree with where he's going there. But anyway, the point is he's not a wokist and he's actively calling it out.
The question was explicitly, are you a humanist feminist or an intersectional feminist?
Yes.
And he responded with being like, no, not intersectional.
Yes. And we have a fantastic article about the origins of woke ideology from Dr. John Tangney. I know he hates it when I call him doctor, but he is, so I'm going to. He explains in this article, which is a premium article, you can sign up on lowseas.com to go and read, how wokeness obviously comes from French authors, paedophiles like Foucault, Derrida, and de Beauvoir, and it's filtered through an American racial lens through American universities and has returned to the motherland.
And the motherland's like, what did you do?
Yeah. You're ruining France with this. It's like, well, they were French intellectuals. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so returning to the article, he says, I could introduce you to young white men who have immense difficulty finding a job for different reasons. Social difficulties are not only structured by gender and skin color, but also by social inequality. So yeah, Macron has become a 2016 anti-SJW. Love it. Love everything about it. Just subscribe to the Sargon of a Cad channel. It was really good. he says that intersectionality breaks up everything and was the negation of something universal, as in it's the lens itself that's a problem. Now, Macron has got a degree in philosophy, so it's good that he can actually articulate this correctly. Because, like, you know, Boris being like, there's nothing wrong with being woke. Yeah, there is. Yeah, there is.
Get the ice pick out.
Exactly. And thank God Macron is like, no, wokeness is cancer. It's destroying French society. We shouldn't be doing this at all. This is cancer. Good for him. Shame Boris can't follow this same lead. And so that's good. Good boy Macron. And it's not just Macron that's against what I guess we'll call Islamo-leftism, because I like that term, wokeism. A few months ago, a bunch of French ministers in Macron's government were like, hang on a sec, this woke stuff is going to tear apart the Republic. Yes, it is. The French Minister of Higher Education, Frédéric Vidal, declared that Islamo-leftism corrupts all of society and universities are not impervious. Universities are the bloody source of it, mate. She criticized radical academics for always looking at everything through their prism of their will to divide and announced that she would be requesting an investigation into university research in these subjects. Good. Following the Hungarian model, ban it.
Well, I'm sorry, we already have Nazism banned.
Yes.
So this is not radical either.
No.
Like, you hear the SJWs freaking out and be like, no, you can't just ban it. And it's like, yeah, but we already banned Nazism already.
Yeah.
Can we just ban its sister?
You can't just ban our bizarro version of Nazism. That's where you're wrong, kiddo. Jean-Michel Blanquer, the Minister of Education, declared that Islamo-leftism wreaks havoc in universities, true, and blamed France's oldest national student union for being the intellectual perpetrator of the assassination. Because, of course, student unions get very, very caught up in radical left-wing politics, yeah. And he's correct.
Very few people vote, then the only candidates are supported by them and their mates, yeah. And then that's enough.
Yeah, so obviously the Guardian's author here had to leap in the way, no, don't criticise critical race theory. Curiously, France's culture warriors believe these new ideas and critical theories are imported from US campuses.
Where the hell else could they come from?
We know they did. We know the genealogy of this ideology.
They literally divide everything into black and white, which no one in Europe does.
No.
No one in Europe talks like that. We always talk about ethnic groups.
What would
groups.
Be the point of literally going, yes, the white people, what the Germans know, the French know, the Belgians this time,
it makes no sense.
It's not helpful.
Outside of the United States of America to talk like this.
Or possibly colonial Africa, I suppose.
Maybe.
But anyway, race relations were initially studied in Britain, while the concept of decoloniality was created in Latin America. Okay, but that's not what we're saying. We're saying critical race theory, which was created in American universities, initially by a chap called Derek Bell, and then following on with Kimberly Crenshaw and all the various others that we talk about in the video. It's not a mystery who these people are. They wrote textbooks. You can read the textbooks and come to understand what it is they're putting across. So they say, and then, they move on. Ironically, many of the ideas that have been developed in North America were influenced by French theorists. Right. So you know that the French theorists ended up taking their ideas to America, and these have come back. You know that's the case, and yet you're still trying to play defense. Lies. Just lies. A remarkable feature of this movement is its disregard for the international literature nourishing these new ideas. Instead of understanding them, it appears more interested in caricaturing them. bull. Absolute bull. Again, not secret, not difficult to find, and widely known, widely read. And it's bizarre that you would find the need to lie about this.
I'm glad that Macron's still keeping the fight then. So, because he's been coming out with a few base takes, just identifying the problem. Intersectionality is destroying the entire free world from within.
Mm-hmm.
And he's keeping it up. Fantastic. I don't know why the rest of the world hasn't caught on, particularly Boris. I mean, it is embarrassing that the left-wing candidate in France is able to get this, but the right-winger in the UK...
has a pride flag on the front of 10 Downing Street.
And is saying there's nothing wrong with being woke.
It's mad.
Everything wrong with being woke.
Yeah.
It's what is it, gender and race socialism.
Yes.
And I'm like, yes, I'm a conservative, I stand for that. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
No, it's absolutely cancerous. Yeah. Good on Macron for leading the way, showing that, you know, world leaders should be making an actual stance against wokeism, because, as he's saying, it's going to tear apart society. And it is tearing apart society. We're seeing this everywhere. So things aren't getting better the more woke they get, are they? Things are getting way, way worse. So good on Macron. Seriously, I mean it. Well, no. I can't believe I've got to praise the French and that propaganda video of me going around with the baguette.
My attack ads are getting more and more true by the day. Go on, say Vive la France.
I'm not saying Vive la... No. Let's do the video comments.
So we'll start doing a defensive anime and manga. As a disclaimer, there's a large chunk of it that is hollow of value or meaning. However, if the aesthetic components and behavioral tropes can be appreciated, accepted, or overlooked, there are many well-developed characters, stories, and themes. We'll do summaries. Due to the 30-second limit, I'll be leaving out a lot. I'll try to avoid spoilers. Someone you recommended Saga of Tony the Evil. I completely agree with this. It's very good. I also recommend Fate Zero, if anyone's interested.
I have absolutely no opinion on anime or mangas, as I've said previously.
Disavow.
What, not caring about them?
No, disavow mangas.
Just in general.
Japan.
Right. Two nukes wasn't enough, is the correct stance. Oh, speaking of which.
Good afternoon, Lotus Eaters. I no longer identify as being Polish. From now on, I am trans-Japanese. Please use my new pronouns, Min-ya.
I love it. The international trans-ethnic movement can't be suppressed.
I mean, it seems to be quite popular, actually, so...
Did you see the trans-Korean one on GB News yesterday?
Yeah.
See that clip?
I didn't see the clip. How was it?
Okay, it was good. It was good, because you see Dan Wooden looking at him just being like, come on, it's got to be a troll. It's got to be a troll. And just throughout, he's like, why on earth would I get all these plastic surgeries if I was trolling?
That's a great point.
And then you've got like Andrew Dorland one being like, yeah, okay, this is it. This is the moment. Yeah. We're actually going to go for trans-ethnicism,
trans-racialism. Yeah.
And there is no defense in these.
He looks Korean.
Yeah.
Exactly like a Korean can.
Love it. I've got slanty eyes, therefore I'm Korean. And then you've got like people in the background being like, well, get out the shoe polish. I'm getting that N-word pass back.
Like, what's interesting, I watched Hassan Piker covering this, and it was amazing because essentially...
He talked about it.
Yeah, no, it was absolutely amazing because he is too stupid to understand that the logic is identical, right? So it's a biologically essentialist category that he is extrapolating from. And if you can change your gender then because of your sex, then you can change your ethnicity because of your race. And you don't really get to say that that's not valid without also saying that transgenderism is invalid. And so he was like, no, this is all terrible. This guy's a freak. He's, you know, insulting him, calling him.
Whoa.
Yeah, no. He was like, oh, yeah, honestly. He was like, this is ridiculous. That can't happen. And I'm just
How
like,
is he still on Twitch?
Honestly, right? All of the things that he was saying, if he just said them literally verbatim about trans women and whatnot, he would have been deplatformed. I mean, it was just hilariously offensive.
Oh, you gotta send me that.
I will send you. It was really, really good. And the thing is, he's too stupid to understand that he's literally carpet bombing the transgender movement with everything that comes out of his mouth. It's amazing.
There was another thing. I sent a message to, I think it was Chris Williamson, about this, being like, mm-hmm. You gotta see it. And he started laughing. And we spoke about it. And it was just like, because there's the point as well. You remember you mentioned about transitioning is now transphobic because you're saying there's a biological essential part. You know, I'm getting the surgery to look more woman by, you know, genital.
But that assumes that breasts are womanly.
And having not a penis is...
Yeah, penises are not womanly.
Exactly. So at the same time, self-ID and biological essentialism, and you can see exactly the same logic in the trans Korean guy, in which he's like, yeah, I self-ID as Korean, therefore I'm Korean. But also, I need slanty eyes, and gets the surgery done. But how can it be both at the same time? How can it both, in both instances of transgenderism and transracialism, be biologically essential and also self-ID? solve that riddle.
What are you IDing into, and how did you get those standards? And you got those standards from the biology of the thing that you're talking about. So it's not
ID in the trash.
It's exactly. So it's not this purely self-ID thing. So what are you talking about?
I don't know if Posey Park has spoken about this. I want to see the turf take on the trans-Koreans.
Oh, I think it's probably going to be very good.
Sitting there with their wine being like, yeah, told you. let's go for the next one.
Look what I found. Man, I'm going to show y'all guys my favorite line here on page 5. It's this right here. And if you want to find more stuff just like it, you can find it all at this website.
Can we go back and read that
here's
quickly?
Here's the URL if you want the...
Sorry, just can we... Because I want to see what it said, because it didn't look...
So the army must not only draw upon the diversity of the nation, the D&I...
Yeah, here we go. Draw from America's diversity, but must also understand how to communicate why DEI... What was that again?
Diversity, equity, inclusion.
Yeah. Is critical to the success of the army profession and how to appreciate, leverage, and integrate principles of DEI into all aspects of its operations. So go full woke.
When you are mortar striking a position... You should be...
Is it inclusive?
You must integrate the principles of DEI into that mortar strike.
Is it a diverse mortar team?
You must take the mortars, and instead of carving on them, eat this. You must carve on them BLM. And next one. That's what you've got to ask to do. Yeah. So that's how you implement it.
Oh my God. So Biden is actually fully brainwashing the military to being woke.
This isn't even the worst part. I think we mentioned last time. His defense secretary that he's put in charge said to the brass... Our leadership must not only reflect the diversity of our nation, but all the way down. So it was like, right, so even if we've got two candidates, the diversity comes before the competence.
Right.
So we're not hiring on competence anymore.
Good thing to know if you're in the army, because the last place you need competence is in the army.
Yeah, especially it's Americans.
Not life and death or anything going on there, you know?
But I know the Americans won't really know this, but in Britain, it's a big joke that during the Iraq War, you guys kept shooting us. Like, there's just endless jokes. I don't know how true they are, but just like, if the British are marching along, they wouldn't recognize the patrol pattern. So the Air Force would just open fire on the British. And I have no idea if it's true, but that's the joke. And it's just, if you keep hiring incompetent people, we'll get more of that, I guess. But let's finish the comment.
Oh yeah, and here's the URL if you want the specific document.
Fantastic. Thanks for the find, at least.
I'm going to have a look at that.
So I think the worst argument for abortion that I've heard yet would be, well, they can't survive outside of the womb on their own. Well, duh, literally no one can. We all need food, we all need shelter, and normally that's provided by other human beings. It's just really disheartening to see them just try to dehumanize babies just so they can act on their most basic primal instincts and not feel guilty about it.
Yeah, I actually really agree with this. I
never thought of that.
I really kind of, well, I mean, I just hate the fact that it's all about justifying being able to kill an unborn baby, right? And that in and of itself, like killing an unborn child is never good, you know? It's no matter what the circumstance is, that in and of itself is a bad thing to do.
Well, I think the argument she's demonstrating would be that if it can't survive without the womb, it's not a child.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I agree.
But she makes an interesting point that I never thought about, which is saying, well, it wouldn't survive outside of the womb is sort of like saying, yeah, well, you wouldn't survive in space.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, I wouldn't survive in an environment where I die. That's true. Good point, leftist, you know.
Not an argument.
Yeah, exactly, but it's not an argument. And it's a ridiculous standard as well, of course, you know. That humans shouldn't go in space because they'll die without a spacesuit. Yeah. that's right, you know.
What is this going to do?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, let's go to the next one.
Hey, Lotus Eaters. This 4th of July, I turned 25. And as an early birthday present, I got myself a gold membership.
Hey.
So I wanted to ask everyone, is there really a difference between the American and Canadian accents to you? I'm basically asking people in the UK and Australia and whatnot. Like, I can tell the difference between the English and the Scottish and the Welsh, but are Americans and Canadians that different? I'm just wondering. Also, I'm going to Gettysburg for the 4th of July, so if anyone wants any photos or pictures from there, let me know, and I'll take them.
Do you want to answer this, or do you want...
Sure, I mean, I can tell the difference.
I would say it's getting harder because of media, and I've noticed this in myself, using Yankee terms, for example, like crosswalk occasionally and whatnot, just because of the way the internet works and culture works. The younger generation of Canadians are sounding more and more American by the day, and the older ones have a thick Canadian accent.
Yeah.
But of course, the Americans also have their massive regional difference as well.
They do, but you are right. I think the Americanization of the Canadian youth is definitely taking place.
It's happening to the world.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm working on the script for a video documentary on, well, discussion on They Live, and Roddy Piper is a Canadian, and you can tell he's a Canadian because he's got that sort of 80s thick Canadian accent that doesn't sound very American. But Canadians these days, I mean, like, you know, Stephen Crowder, Lauren Southern, Lauren Chen, you wouldn't know they weren't Americans unless they told you they weren't Americans, right? They sound just like Americans.
You have to pay attention. It's getting harder.
Yeah, yeah, you have to be very on the lookout for it.
But there were two Canadians at my university, for example, and one of them, I think, was from the West, and she... proper Canadian, easy to tell. Mm-hmm. The other one, my God, she was sounding like a Californian. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh, how's that happened? But there's that.
Mm. Yeah.
In response to that oil guy, I may not have a beard, and that may be a permanent situation. However, in my defense, my second job / side gig is working for a friend of mine who has a basically men's-only dadism blog, shipping beard oil, beard butter, and mustache wax and various other manly merch. So I'm making the beards of the world better. Wolfandiron.com. There's a sale till the 7th. Shameless plug.
That's awesome.
Fair enough.
I mean, I have a beard, but I'm growing the world's beards. I also wanted to mention on the accent thing about vowel shifts. This might be a boring point, but I really like this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So the shifts that happen throughout the world, so the fact that language changes over time, Victorian English sounds a bit weird, but also the vowels are the things that change. So, for example, there's a shift that's been happening across the United States. It hasn't gone for all of it yet, but it's really getting there. Mm. Among, like, the O-U sound. So to say, I caught the ball. That's the English way of saying it, right? Mm-hmm. And it's most of America used to also say it like this. Mm-hmm. It's become, I caught the ball.
Hmm.
Caught instead of caught.
Yeah, Americans.
And these small things.
Figure that out. Get that right. Caught, not caught.
They also run along the lines, because you can detect where they are through a survey of how people talk. And you can see over the decades, it's spread across the United States and it's been seeping into Canada.
Is it kind of like a Bostonian way of saying it, is it?
I think it's the when you run it backwards, it comes from like the Midwest or something, but right, fact check me on that. But it's an interesting thing because you can literally see it like a cancer spreading. And it literally runs, it's not, because internet and television makes things more difficult, but it does seem to run along just like moving lines, like a front line of an army.
Huh.
And it has gotten into Canada.
Infecting the Americans with bad pronunciation.
And it's happening to us too, because we consume American media. So
terrible.
Your kids will end up speaking not like you.
No, not if I have anything to do with that. I'm actually quite strict about my son's pronunciation. If he pronounces something wrong, I correct him on the spot. You've got to always be on patrol. Always be on patrol.
Yankee patrol.
Yeah.
Like Thought Patrol.
Oh, there are lots of things like SJW patrol, you know, Yankee patrol.
All right.
Probably Canadian patrols.
Keep them out.
Yeah.
I am just going to wear the Cricket Chad shirt for all my videos from now on because I want people to see how awesome it is. And to show off my muscles. And I just had this thought. The teeth are white, but the gums are red. In other words, we all have white Republicans in our mouths. Good luck getting that image out of your head.
You know what to do, leftists.
Follow your leader. Let's go for the next one.
With the Washington Post endorsing children being exposed to kink, I have to wonder, like, how far are we away from Brave New World-style erotic play? You know, like at the beginning of the book that all the children were doing. Just saying, dystopian writers were quite prescient, apparently.
Well, this is the difference. One of the main differences between Orwell and Huxley is that Huxley got this one right. Orwell was like, oh, they'll be extremely sex negative and repressive. And all that. No. They'll
make it meaningless and then want kids to enact it.
Yes, they'll have kids doing it from their earliest years so it becomes a nothing. Yeah, that's exactly it.
So here we are in Kirkenes. Looks lovely, doesn't it?
Where?
Kirkenes.
The Russian border is right over there. Almost makes you forget the whole intersectional civil war, eh?
Russia will certainly do that.
it does until I have to listen to what my kids are being taught at school.
Yeah.
I'm actively deprogramming my daughter at this point. Like,
seriously?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. This SJW stuff is all over the place, and she has lessons about LGBT, and I've been subverting it by being like, okay, well, what's this? What's that? Like the other day, like she came in and she was like, there were two girls, I think, holding hands in school, and she was like, oh, that's so cute, and I'm like, that's really condescending. They're not pets. You know, they're just normal people. And she was like, well, it's like, no, look at your assumptions. You know, you've assumed that there's something different and unusual about them being gay instead of treating them just like a normal person. And you can see the cogs turning as well. It's like, hang on a second, why am I doing that? You know, if I do believe that this is just normal, so she's only 11. You know, so
is she in an all-girls school, I wonder?
No.
Right, okay.
And so it's just very interesting how, like, all of this propaganda, it's totally there. It's totally happening.
I knew a bunch of girls who went to an all-girls school near in one of the cities near where I lived, and one of the interesting things is when I used to go and see them when I was, you know, that age, they would come out with nonsense that even at the time I thought was nonsense, like obvious leftist propaganda, as you would recognize it now. And a bunch of them are like, I go back and look at, you know, you look at your friends' Facebook accounts and you're just like, yeah, a whole bunch of them are full-on leftists these days. And I'm like, yep, they go after your kids for a reason.
They absolutely do, and that's why you've got to be on patrol. Right, George says, I think Trump utterly...
Oh, no, we have a thing to do first, don't we?
Oh, sorry.
So I say happy birthday, happy 40th birthday to Wayne Holland from his fiancée, Louisa, who contacted us and wanted us to wish him a happy birthday. So thanks
Happy birthday, Wayne.
Happy birthday, Wayne.
But yeah, right. So George says, I think Trump utterly failed when it came to supporting alt-tech. He should have joined the alternatives when he had the most influence. Plus, I don't particularly trust his team with free speech. They'll just likely be a conservative Twitter similar to Gab. Probably.
To be honest, that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, I'm of the opinion, obviously the ideal is some kind of neutral platform.
Sure.
But if it's not possible, then there's going to be a conservative Twitter and a Twitter.
And if they're going to nuke Parler. I mean, Parler never recovered, which is really disappointing because I could never get back onto it, to be honest. Yeah. So, you know, assuming they don't get deplatformed and this works, Trump joins it, that would be good.
Yeah.
Brian says, surely better is better than getter. Everyone hates the new name of something new. Okay.
I kind of like getter. Get her done. It's just stuck in my head every time I read it.
It sounds kind of redneck, which is nice. North Antonian Knight says, it's disheartening that there are still so many people who vote Labour despite how bad they are. Have you heard that Labour are now demanding ministers extend plague restrictions until cats and dogs are jabbed? No, I haven't seen this.
Why would the cats and dogs transmit the virus?
Look, there was like a lion that tested positive for coronavirus in the zoo. I mean, I'm just thinking, who the hell's testing a lion for coronavirus?
You know, they do drug tests and they're really funny results come out of them. Like, there was one guy who ran a cocaine test and chocolate test positive for cocaine. Like, if anyone's out there and they've got a bunch of access to these tests, like maybe you work at one of the stations, just start testing your food and I want to see if any of them come back positive. Because, I mean, that'd be hilarious.
Tyber Fett says, why do you think British Muslims are more adversarial and extreme in their views? Do you think they are more defensive as they are forming colonies in a foreign land? Could it be preaching by the religious leaders? Or could it be them running into super leftist LGBT in the West is causing the bigger outcry? Well, one of the reasons is that half the mosques in this country follow a very, very strict orthodox and anti-British view of Islam called Diobandism, which was founded expressly with the purpose of opposing the British Empire. And this controls half our mosques, at least. And I can't imagine that coming face-to-face with a bunch of progressive wokists is changing their mind on any of these issues.
He raises a more foundational point, though. Why the affinity for Diobandi Islam, for example?
Because they're from Pakistan.
That's one thing, but why no change?
There's no motivation from the government to do anything about it.
But there's the point there. Do you think they're being more defensive because they're forming colonies in a foreign land? A foreign example I could think of is the Korean enclave in Japan, for example. Mm-hmm. So during the war, they went over and they're now supporters of North Korea. Weird situation. Mm. And the Japanese want to integrate them and get rid of them from being this North Korean simp land in the middle of the country. But they're clinging on to this extremism because it's a colony.
Mm.
So if you can decolonize it, then you could be able to do something.
I'm not saying that's not a factor. I don't know that it is. I do think it's the kind of Islam that we've got, though, that is the problem.
Sure.
Pakistan is a very, very... I mean, I would consider it a quite extreme religious place.
If we had imported Bosnian Muslims rather than Pakistani Muslims, would it be easier?
Oh, totally.
But also the colonization is...
But not just that. Like, if we'd taken Muslims from almost any other state, it probably would have been easier. It's just that in Pakistan, they're highly, highly conservative and religious for this extreme variant of Islam. It's the Taliban's variant of Islam. That most of the Muslims in this country follow.
Who Pakistan funds.
Yeah.
And saves.
Yeah, exactly.
From our soldiers.
And so it's just like, you know, I mean, it could be that it's the fact that they're sort of like colonies in a foreign land, so they're constantly in contact with the foreign culture, and so it makes them commit even more firmly to the culture that they have. It could be that. It could be the LGBT stuff is threatening them, essentially. It could be any of these things. I don't know, but I do know that they have quite an extreme version of Islam anyway. So
the Savile Town, for example, where it's, you know, almost entirely one group, that can't be allowed to stand. That is just going to produce the problems that we have.
Yeah. The Imam of Dibli says, isn't religious freedom also not to be religious at all? Seems like you have more rights if you're religious, which is a little discriminatory. Yeah, that's exactly right.
It is legally discriminatory as well, because in British law, no religion is also a protected characteristic.
Yes, but nobody's going to go to jail for you offending an atheist.
They should, by the law.
But they're not going to. S.H. Silver says, it makes sense that British Muslims would be even more extreme on homosexuality than majority mosque practice Deobandism. Here we go. A sect that positions itself as being more extremely anti-liberal and anti-Western. I mean, that's correct. Student of History says, this is why I hate politicians. Long-winded, waffling, and never-ending speeches filled with nothingness, with the only damn goal of pacifying people. A proper response to this is, we don't have blasphemy here. If you're offended, piss off. If you threaten violence, you've got to go. We will get you. Got simple as. I love the politicians. Basically, their answers are essentially a form of filibustering. So I'm just going to talk until you get bored.
Your brain just goes politician answer and moves on.
Exactly. Israel Hayes says, when you have beliefs and the party switches wildly away from it, you no longer support the party and then get smeared. Hey, Carl, that doesn't sound familiar, mate. Yeah, exactly. Freewell says, it's quite possible that Galloway was simply helping his hard left mates in Labour by trying to split the Labour vote. He is an unrequited socialist. Yeah, well, this is why Owen Jones should have been pleased with what he's doing and supported him.
It was weird.
Yeah. You want to get rid of Starmer. The quickest way to get rid of Starmer is this loss.
But what about the Holy Labour Party? You're blaspheming against
the Emperor. Matories. They're already in charge, Owen. They've got a massive majority.
Thanks to you.
Yeah, thanks to you. Student of History says, good news for the dear leader Stormer as he remains supreme leader. Bad news for the dear leader Stormer is that he needs to explain why winning by slimmer margins doesn't mean they must switch back to the leadership of communist comrade Corbyn's party. Check the first letters of my moniker for Corbyn. CCCP. I didn't misspell president yesterday. Good Sir Biden is a resident. Oof. Alexander says, BBC reporters Galloway, you're not from here. Why are you running for election? Amazing. I love it. So you're a foreigner.
Keep out. Shibboleth.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I forgot she's from the BBC's Batley and Spen office. There isn't one.
Of course. But Alexander says, well, neither is a lot of the constituency, though. So where's the problem? Exactly. A lot of the constituencies, of course, from immigrant background.
Yeah. But I also want to know how it's like 300 votes. If 300 people had just changed their minds in Batley and Spen, Starmer has to go. How does that... The absurdity of politics sometimes.
I love it.
It's just like 300 people believe, and therefore it happens.
Yep. Baron von Merkhausen says, watching the news with interviews with Galloway, isn't the media meant to embarrass the candidate by asking critical questions and not the other way around? Yes, it's hilarious watching the BBC humiliate themselves.
So why wouldn't you vote for the lovely Labour candidate? Because I'm Workers' Party.
Because I'm an opposition candidate. That's why. I would like to win, if that's okay. Kenneth Hughes says, in the media, the US does the same thing with our third-party candidates, asking why they're there, like they don't have a right to run for office under a banner that isn't Republican or Democrat. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? The thing is, you would think they'd be in favour of, like, you know, outsider candidates just to shake things up in the establishment, because that's clicks for them, that's, you know... The moving of the chessboard, which they can, you know, like, view over.
But it's the BBC. I mean, they don't make their money that way, do they?
Yeah,
they make their money off the establishment.
So. That's true. Heathcliff says, Galloway may be absolutely a terrible person with terrible ideas, but goddamn, that interview just makes you like him. How bad does the BBC have to be for that to be true? Yeah, I know, it's crazy. I mean, he's a great speaker, to be honest, and it's fun watching him do things, even if I totally disagree with everything that he's saying.
You could have so many drinks with him. Like, you could spend all night with him, and I reckon it would be fun. You could not do that with, like, anyone in Labour.
Imagine being forced to have drinks with Keir Starmer.
I mean, you just want to leave.
Well, sorry, I'm saying forced to have drinks with Keir Starmer.
With Galloway, I mean, you just have a laugh. It would be amazing.
Tobias says, great work, guys. One thing I'm wondering about, critical theory seems to designed to uproot any and all knowledge by implying that there is no objective truth, only power. That's correct. Is critical theory immune against itself, though? When looking at how it's applied, I get the feeling it's its own Achilles heel. Especially when you counter critical theory with critical theory, it becomes undeniably obvious that the same chain of argumentation is okay to be used for one person that will be declared to be unacceptable to use when countering. The thing is, though, what critical theory is doing, though, is trapping you within the framework of critical theory. And so, yes, you can attack one position established by critical theory with another position established by critical theory, which can be attacked by another one, but you're forever in the eternal deconstruction of critical theory. And so you'll never produce anything of any use that can't also be undermined with exactly the same tools that you use to build what you have. And this is why it's cancer, frankly.
It's the turtle world. It's like, Where is the world? It's on the back of a turtle. Yes. What's below the turtle? More turtles.
All the way down.
Yeah. So we're just wasting our time talking about turtles.
Yes. A bit racist turtles. Chris Wolf says, the most frustrating part of the woke wars that it will end when the woke decide that nothing happened and we're all crazy talking about gender and the feminine penis. Yeah, it'll be gaslighting. Mass gaslighting. Well, we were never for any of that. Oh, God.
I can't wait to be 90 and for, like, you know, young people to look at you and be like, why on earth did you believe penises could be feminine back in your day? I'd just be like, I didn't.
Yeah, exactly. I was very much against it. Josh says, to defeat fear, you must become fear. Therefore, to defeat racism, one must become racist. Well, that's the critical theory view. Luke says, they are right that they don't teach critical race theory in schools. Rather, they apply critical race theory to their teaching. Yes, exactly. Omar says, Moss and Bailey / slice of hand gaslighting is sock just 101. BLM isn't political, it's just anti-racism. Now implement my political agenda. CRT isn't anti-white, it's just acknowledging racist history. Now learn about the evils of the white man. Repeat ad infinitum. It's true. HR Slave says, I showed your CRT video to my normie Christian conservative parents. They thought your analysis was very good. Oh, thank you. But commented that the actual content of CRT is gibberish and hard to make sense of. That's correct. That's why they do it. I explained to them that that's exactly the point. Keep up the great content. You're red-pilling more and more normies every day. Well, thank you very much. And thanks for share the videos around. That was the point of doing, like, you know, just a 10-minute, this is what critical race theory is from their books. You know, no, like, you know, editorializing from me particularly.
Help out people who don't have the time to go and find a goddamn textbook, find one that isn't purposely written in gibberish.
Yes, exactly. And then, pass through the impenetrable wall of nonsense. Kevin says, so the Democrats are all in favor of CRT, and CRT says whites are supremacists, so why have the SBI not arrested the entire Democrat caucus, since they are the only ones pushing the idea of whites being superior to blacks and POC? I mean, they are. They are the only people pushing that, apart from the KKK.
You know, I'm starting to agree with Joe Biden here. Maybe there are loads of white supremacists in the United States.
Well, yeah, I mean, they vote for him.
Yeah.
Matthew says, in the last election, Macron was castigating Le Pen for her modest proposals and calling them far right, even after attacks like the Constant Hall shooting on the 13th of November 2015, where 89 people died and the Eagles of Death Metal were on stage. What happened that allowed Macron to make the switch like this and tell Le Pen to hold his beer and watch this? Recently he called Le Pen soft on Islam.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Because things never got better in France, they just got worse. So that's going to be one part of it, majorly.
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm not an expert on French politics, so I can't tell you the exact ins and outs of it.
But there's never any good news that comes.
No.
Well,
apart from this.
There's never any series of time that goes by without something awful, and it being the direct result of intersectional thinking.
Hmm. But it's good that, frankly, the major candidates are on the same page when it comes to wokeism.
Yeah.
So that's good.
And it's heaven on earth.
Yeah. I mean, God, can you imagine?
I mean, how bad do things have to get to before that's the case, though?
Yeah, but could you imagine if our two major parties were both like, no, wokeism's awful. It's destroying the country. That'd be amazing.
God, it'd be like being in Poland.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be like living in Poland. Matthew says, conservatives, definition, a woke progressive 18 months ago. Correct. Student of history, Macron taking the 2016 base position. Yeah, it's great. Feels like it needs an MLG edit in honor of him finally being less than 5 years behind reality.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, that is a great idea. Yeah. Also,
if anyone's got some time for a video comment tomorrow, there's an idea. That'd be fantastic.
Carbohydrate Crusader. All right, lads, keep up the good work. I've been speaking to more of my normie, less politically active friends. They'll seem fairly normal on issues such as trans athletes, lockdowns, and even the gay subversive stuff, at least in my lived experience. I feel, though, normal people are starting to say this stuff is cringe. Do you feel like they were turning a corner on the left? I feel like it'll take much longer personally, but I do think the public sentiment is shifting. Keep up the good work. You should be very proud of this show. Thank you. If only for the fact that you give so many fairly freedom-minded individuals a bit more white-pilled by your presence. balance. Thanks, Lotus Eaters. Well, thank you very much. I have noticed. A friend of mine is probably going to start working here doing admin at some point because he needs a job and we need administrators. But for years, the pair of us have been talking about this woke stuff, even before, like, you know, I started a YouTube channel. And he always used to get from his family, you're overreacting, this is nothing, this is just in universities or something like that. And literally in the last couple of months, they've all come to me like, I'm sorry, you were right. Yeah, we were right.
This is a white pill, and I'm glad that this guy's saying it. The public consciousness, absolutely, it just needs to get into the professional world now.
Yes,
in the same way that feminism has become a joke term.
Yeah. But the problem, that's true, but all of the assumptions of feminism are just folded into intersectionality. Yep. So feminism never really went away, it just kind of took over.
But in the professional world, this now needs to become cringe.
Totally. Chad Koala says, have either of you chaps watched The Tomorrow War that came out today? Not only is it refreshingly devoid of wokeness, Chris Platt plays a warrior trad dad fighting tooth and nail against a matriarchal race of savage aliens whose legions of male simps will die by the thousands to protect their thought queen.
And The Guardian gave it 2 stars.
Did they? That sounds awesome. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah.
Looking forward to the new He-Man remake, actually. Yeah. Tony says, can you give a shout out to my wife? She said she did not like the attention competition, as she calls you at first, but you've grown on her. Her name is Vivian. Hello, Vivian. So glad we're growing on you like a fungus.
Attention competition?
Yeah, well, I guess we're the attention competition.
I suppose everyone is, technically.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, people on the internet, it's an attention economy. What do you want us to do?
Win.
Yeah, exactly. There we go. But anyway, nice to like speak to you, Vivian. Rebecca says, just read about the toppling of statues in Winnipeg. My sister lives there. Just 2 days before, she was walking and an Aboriginal person on his bike stopped to stare at her and said, white privilege. Dude, I'm just trying to grill. She was just out for a walk and not in his way. My sister does not feel safe in Winnipeg and will be getting a hidden mini camera to take with her when she goes out. Well, yeah, I mean, can you carry?
What do you mean?
Carry a gun?
Oh, in Canada? I don't think so.
I don't know.
It depends where she lives, I guess.
But yeah,
the statue thing. So a statue of Queen Victoria has been pulled down, and it's disgusting to see.
Hmm.
Like if the British Conservatives don't say anything about this, it'll be embarrassment.
Which they won't. Macron would have said something, Boris. Yeah. Macron would have condemned this.
I don't care about what happened in Canada's, you know, recent history or whatever it is that you're complaining about. You don't pull down statues of Queen Victoria. That's beyond the pale. Like, you cannot pin that on her.
David Cooper says, I got married this week. Hope to lead a good life, raising strong kids. So far, a nice setup I've got. Well, congratulations and good luck. Harry says, this would have been better for yesterday, but I always see myself as a moderate Christian. Now, everything the religious right say about gay marriage has been proven right, and atheism is just failure. As they question, if it is wrong to do X, which is obviously wrong, then are we all converting to moderate modern Christianity? I'm personally just not religious, so I'm not going to be converting to any religion at all. But I think that the moderate conservatives weren't evil or terrible or anything like that. Being obsessive about these sort of nitpicks in the Bible kind of missed the point, I think, of the moral framework that Christianity provides and the practical use that it has in daily life.
It's not wrong.
What?
It's not provable. I'd say that. Well, like, all the supernatural stuff is just hampered in the rest of it.
It's all nonsense, right? But the point is, everything is nonsense. All of these sort of moral teachings.
Well, no, that's I'm not saying it, you know, blah blah blah, sky daddy, not true, but that for the whole thing, throw it out. I'm saying that it's kind of an embarrassment for Christianity that it wasn't able to evolve into some kind of civic religion in which you don't have to buy into the supernatural parts, but it's there as a bulwark against.
Well, I mean, there is still time for this to happen. You know, this it's not, but the problem is going to be the true believers who are like, well, we can't accept it as a sort of secular religion. The sort of civic religion, you have to believe the text literally. Yeah. But I mean, there is definitely an option for that because of the need that Christianity fulfilled was the general moral structure of an average life. You know, what should the average person do? Well, be good. You know, turn the other cheek, love your neighbor as yourself. These are all good. Yeah, exactly.
Take care of
get married, get a family, take care of yourself, get a job, be a good person. These are all just good bits of advice. And, I mean, you really should adopt them on their own merits, because they're just...
The Ben Shapiro Manifesto.
Basically, yeah. But you adopt them on their own merits because they're just good things for you and the people around you. You don't actually need to be told by an all-powerful God that these things are true, because they are. But
I'm seeing in the chat, apparently, there's a statue of Queen Elizabeth II that's been pulled down as well.
Okay, well, that's too far now. Macron would definitely object to that, Boris.
There's something within me, I don't know if it's just a British thing, it's just like, I really want to just turn around and be like, military, send them in.
Matthew says, my son was taught a deconstructing racism class online this year during lockdown to his multiracial class, the entire point of which was to raise the racial consciousness among colorblind children. The kids largely seemed hurt, embarrassed, and unengaged. Every class was followed by me channeling the ghost of Yuri Bezmenov to my son. Yeah, unfortunately, this is just something that people are going to have to do repeatedly, is counteract the woke nonsense. Like, the good thing is, with my daughter the other day, she came up to me and she asked me about something that was in the woke class, and rather than going hard on it, I was just like, look, whenever they tell you something that doesn't seem to make sense, it's because they're keeping some information from you. They're not telling you everything you need to know, and they're doing that deliberately. And I could see the gears working ahead, and I just left her, you know, that's... You go and think about
it. My work here is done.
Yeah, exactly. You know? But the great thing about it is I'm not the one, like, you know, pouring new content into it. It's just like, look, just remember, they're not telling you the truth. Chris says, I feel like two or so generations ago, they're just going to look... They're going to look back on the craziness of now and wonder, did they accidentally turn reality into meme world for about 10 years and somehow not notice? It's going to be pretty awful, to be honest. I mean, when the view of what a feminine and masculine body is returns to a more traditional view of it, all of the people who are convinced to have surgeries, I mean, it's got to be a flurry of lawsuits, isn't it, really? Like, come on, what the hell is everyone doing, you know? Like, Elliot Page, I've chopped up for my breasts. Yes.
Because now I'm a man.
Yes.
Manlet.
Spring Valley Itland says, good afternoon, gents, and Vicky. Oh, got a Vicky fan. With the kink fetish propaganda, I decided I would start my own first podcast with an episode about LGBT. I thought I'd plot down some bullet points to remember everything I wanted to mention that's wrong. Ended up with 3,000 words over 6 pages. Blimey.
You're going to need to cut that down.
Yeah. Or you could do like an epic James Lindsay style podcast, but you've got to be good. My 21-year-old girlfriend not only loved it, she added to it. I've got the ring ready and plan to ask her to marry me when we go on vacation in 2 weeks' time. Wish me luck. Love from Norway. Well, good luck.
It's great to hear. I am looking forward. If you have an argument that I'd love to see a video that is shareable to like 10 minutes of someone just explaining why the conservative pride flag is not acceptable. Mm. Like why this is just, again, sexual collectivism. Mm. It is not something conservatives or liberals could ever buy into. Mm-hmm. And it is embarrassing when the conservatives are like, oh, don't worry, we've not done the racial pride flag. Like, no, morons. Like,
yes.
Individual people are individuals. That's the whole purpose here.
But until they change the pride flag, and then it's like, no, we're for the trans racial pride flag.
Anyway, it's always next year, conservatives, isn't there? Anyway, so we're going to end the show. We will be back on Monday, 1 o'clock, although we will be uploading content to the YouTube channel because we're going to do filming of weekend stuff today, just so there's some stuff up and you guys have something to watch. And
well, there's a lot of stuff that we didn't have time to cover, to be honest.
Yeah, and also if you want more from us, there is loads of content on lotuscities.com. Much of it is free. The best stuff is all premium, so do go and sign up. It is also how we keep everything rolling. But thank you to everyone who has, and we'll be back on Monday.